Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Sequel Communications earnings call for the first quarter of 2014. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance, please press the star then the zero key on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this call will be recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Mr. Pete Abel, Senior Vice President of Communications. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome to this discussion of the first quarter 2014 results for Sequel Communications Holdings 1, LLC, and its subsidiaries which do business as Suddenlink Communications. Before we get started this morning, we'd like to remind you that certain statements made during this conference call might be considered forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Private Securities Litigation Act of 1995. Those statements are subject to the various risks and uncertainties described in our annual report, which is posted to our website. These risks and uncertainties could cause actual future results to differ materially from the results expressed or implied by any forward-looking statements made on this call. The information discussed today will be based on our earnings release for the period ended March 31, 2014. Both our earnings release and quarterly report have been posted to the Investor Relations section of our website at suddenlink.com. The release compares actual and pro forma financial and operating results for the first quarters of 2014 and 2013. And our presenters today will focus their comments on year-over-year pro forma results for the first quarter. The pro forma information they discuss today includes the acquisition of cable systems from Northland Communications on January 2, 2014, as if that transaction had been completed on January 1, 2013. With that, I'll now turn the call over to our CEO, Jerry Kent. Jerry?
Thanks, and good morning, everyone. We're pleased to report first quarter 2014 results that show acceleration in the growth of customer relationships and in each of our core services. Notably, we saw significant improvement in residential PSUs, adding 49,600 in the first quarter of 2014 compared to 31,400 in the first quarter of 2013, which really is a nearly 60% increase. We experienced enhanced growth in each of the PSU categories. Video unit gains of 2,400 in the first quarter of this year tripled gains in the year-ago period. Internet units grew by more than 35,000, a 43% improvement over the year-ago period, and phone units grew by more than 12,000, doubling gains in the first quarter of 2013. Turning to RGUs, we had a total of approximately 3,710,000 at March 31st, an increase of nearly 117,000 units in the trailing 12 months, representing 3.3% annual growth. Including commercial services, we added 69,000 RGUs in the first quarter and more than 130,000 in the trailing 12 months, a 3.6% increase over the year-ago period. We're off to a great start in our effort to grow customer relationships for the fifth consecutive year with a Suddenlink quarterly record of adding nearly 23,000 customer relationships. This first quarter gain helps to achieve a record 1,420,000 residential customer relationships. In addition, we ended the first quarter with more than 386,000 triple play customers, showing 11% growth over the year-ago period. Now, while achieving our goal to add customer relationships, we also maintained robust ARPU growth, setting another Suddenlink record of $161.93, an increase of more than $13, or 9% year-over-year. We continue to believe that the investments and focus on growing the number of high-quality customers will contribute to the long-term growth of the company. As evidence, our first quarter 2014 revenue increased to $575 million, up 6% over the comparable period to 2013. First quarter adjusted EBITDA after non-recurring expenses was $221.1 million, which is a 6.2% increase over the year-ago period. First quarter adjusted EBITDA before non-recurring expenses increased 6% to $222 million. Free cash flow in the first quarter of 2014 was $68.7 million, an increase of $30.6 million, or 80.5% over the year-ago period. In addition to our residential success, Considerable momentum continues in our advertising and commercial lines of business. First quarter total commercial revenue of $79.6 million reflects a 13.2% year-over-year increase and includes 18.7% year-over-year growth in our commercial high-speed data, on-net carrier services, and telephone revenues combined. Advertising revenue increased 16.1%, led by higher national political advertising. Our carrier business also continues to perform exceptionally well, with more than 1,430 fiber-to-the-tower tenants in billing as of March 31st, an increase of 68% over the number in billing at the end of the first quarter of 2013. Our fiber-to-the-tower business has generated substantial revenue growth from the success-based capital investments we've made, with significant long-term contracts adding to our future growth in carrier revenues. Tom will provide more details on this business segment in his remarks. Operation Reliance, the internal name for bringing all phone operations in-house, is proceeding according to plan, and we're on schedule to complete the migration by year-end. And this will significantly reduce our annual phone expenses. On January 2, 2014, we completed the acquisition of three cable systems from Northland Communications. The systems are located in our largest state, Texas, and serve more than 12,000 residential and commercial customers. The migration work to our platforms completed to date has been successful. Finally, I'm pleased to report this morning that we have signed an agreement that will give customers access to Netflix through our TiVo set-top devices. We're the largest U.S. cable operator to date to reach an agreement of this kind with Netflix, and we expect to make the Netflix app available through our TiVo devices this summer. At that time, we'll become the only provider in substantially all of our markets to offer customers a one-stop experience for searching, finding, and viewing a range of popular video programming from Netflix, other web sources, live TV, digital video recordings, and our own on-demand library. This agreement is a great example of how the cable industry can work with internet content providers on innovative solutions that benefit consumers. We'll provide additional information about the agreement in a news release that will be distributed shortly after the call. Thanks for your time this morning. I'll now turn the floor over to Tom McMillan, our Chief Operating Officer, to provide additional perspective on our first quarter operating results. Tom.
Thanks, Jerry, and good morning, everyone. As Jerry noted, at March 31, we had more than 3.7 million residential RGUs, an increase of nearly 117,000 year over year. And when you include commercial units, we had nearly 3.8 million RGUs, having added more than 130,000 units over the trailing 12 months. On basic video, we ended the quarter with approximately 1.19 million customers, and we're pleased with our success in adding 2,400 basic video customers during the quarter. On digital video, we ended the first quarter with 888,000 customers, up nearly 16,000 over the fourth quarter, and a gain of nearly 33,000 units, or 3.8%, in the trailing 12 months. Digital penetration of basic video customers continues to increase, and at the end of the first quarter was 74.8%, up from 70.1% a year ago. Along with our annual growth in digital video, we added more than 17,000 DVR customers over the last 12 months, an annual growth rate of 4.3%. DVR penetration of digital customers stood at 46.8% at the end of the first quarter. We added more than 29,800 HD customers in the first quarter and more than 89,000 in the past 12 months, representing 14.5% year-over-year growth, bringing HD penetration of digital customers to 79.6%. That's up from 72.2% a year ago. Our sell-in rate of HD to new digital customers continues to exceed 90%. Total penetration of advanced digital video services, meaning either DVR or HD customers, stood at 80.7% of digital customers at the end of the first quarter. This was up from 73.6% at the end of the first quarter, 2013. We finished the first quarter with more than 1.1 million residential high-speed internet customers, up more than 35,000 over the previous quarter and up nearly 69,000, or 6.6% in the trailing 12 months. as a result of our accelerating growth, residential data penetration of estimated data homes passed was 36.2%, up from 34.3% a year ago. At the end of the first quarter, more than 80% of our high-speed internet customers had download speeds of 15 meg or higher. Fueling this is our continued success of selling faster broadband services to new customers, offering market-leading 30, 50, and 107 meg download speeds in more areas. At the end of the first quarter, we had more than 183,000 customers with internet services that are 30 meg or faster. The number of customers subscribing to these higher level speeds has more than doubled in the past year. Our new customer selling rate of these 30 meg or higher services was more than 28% in the first quarter this year. That's 1.5 times the selling rate in the first quarter of last year. At the same time, each month we are successfully upgrading thousands of existing customers to higher speed tiers. A complement to our high-speed internet services is Suddenlink Wi-Fi at home. During the most recent quarter, nearly 55% of new high-speed internet connects also purchased this service, as we added more than 29,000 Suddenlink Wi-Fi at home customers. In the trailing 12 months, Wi-Fi at home grew almost 38% with a net gain of nearly 82,000 units, bringing our total customers with this service to more than 298,000, or more than one of every four internet customers. On telephony, we finished the quarter with nearly 528,000 customers, up more than 12,000 units during the quarter. We more than doubled the net gain in the first quarter this year compared to the net gain in the same period last year. During the 12 months, we added 48,000 units for a 10% increase. As a result, residential telephone penetration reached 20.3% of estimated telephone homes passed. As of the end of the first quarter, total customer relationships were nearly 1.42 million, an increase of nearly 23,000 during the quarter, representing the single largest quarterly gain in customer relationships we have ever achieved. Fueling this accelerating growth in customer relationships is our success in adding non-video customers. During the first quarter, we added nearly 20,000 of these higher margin customers and recorded a gain of more than 47,000, or nearly 18%, in the trailing 12 months. That's a 72% increase versus the same period last year. Our unit success, particularly in broadband and phone, was aided by a 20.1% triple play selling rate to new customers. That's up approximately 54% from our triple play selling rate in the first quarter of 2013 and speaks to the success we are having with our bundled offers and sales channels. At the end of the first quarter, we had more than 386,000 triple play relationships, an increase of nearly 39,000 in the trailing 12 months. On the commercial side of our business, our more than 59,000 commercial internet customers at March 31 resulted from adding approximately 5,900 customers in the trailing 12 months, representing 11% growth. Over the same period, we added 8,100 commercial phone customers, ending the first quarter with 33,800 for a year-over-year growth rate of 32%. Again, both of these growth rates are above those achieved during the same period last year. We also continue to see record-setting gains in our carrier services group. We have now successfully completed and initiated billing for more than 1,430 fiber to the tower tenants and have another 261 tower tenants on signed contracts and in the process of being installed. Our carrier sales team continues to aggressively pursue additional tenant opportunities, while at the same time, existing tenants continue to request bandwidth upgrades. I'd like to single out a couple other initiatives briefly before closing. From an e-commerce standpoint, our investment in online sales continues to pay off. Since relaunching this effort in August, we've seen strong results. E-commerce sales in the first quarter of this year were 26% higher than in the first quarter of 2013. As Jerry mentioned, our teams are making great progress on Operation Reliant. We have completed many of the necessary agreements, added internal resources, and begun the build-out of connectivity and platforms to bring all phone operations in-house. we anticipate beginning to migrate customers starting in the third quarter. Additionally, our teams have been busy assimilating and integrating the three Texas cable systems we acquired from Northland Communications. Those efforts will continue over the coming months as we position these systems to add our complete complement of services. And finally, we launched our new Suddenlink2Go mobile app in early April. The app extends our Suddenlink2Go experience to allow customers to watch live TV and on-demand shows on an iOS tablet anywhere at home or on the go. The mobile app also allows customers to manage their accounts, as well as access email, self-help tools, and special offers. We will continue to add more content, support services, and mobile devices in the months ahead. Thank you for your time today. I'd now like to turn things over to our CFO, Mary Medusky, for a closer look at our financial results during the quarter. Mary?
Thanks, Tom. Today, we'll discuss financial results for Sequel Communications Holdings One LLC and subsidiaries for the first quarter of 2014, adding to what Jerry and Tom have already provided. I'll also discuss our balance sheet and liquidity position. As of March 31st, the face amount of our debt outstanding was approximately $4.7 billion, which was comprised of $1.5 billion of our 6.375% senior notes at Sequel Communications Holdings One, $750 million of the 5.8% senior notes at Sequel Communications Holdings One, $2.45 billion of senior secured term loans at Sequel Communications LLC, and $20.1 million of capital leases and other obligations at Sequel Communications LLC. At March 31st, we had approximately $219 million of cash on hand and approximately $482.5 million available under our $500 million revolving credit facility after taking into account $17.5 million of outstanding letters of credit. Our secured bank leverage at March 31st, as calculated under our credit agreement, was 2.74 times, which was in compliance with our bank covenant with significant cushion. Also at March 31st, our total leverage, calculated under the indentures governing both the 6.375% and 5.125% senior notes, was 5.27 times. At March 31st, we had no interest rate hedges in place, and the weighted average cost of our debt was 4.68%. The proportion of fixed rate notional debt was 48%. Regarding subsequent events, based on our fiscal 2013 results, the excess cash flow recapture payment, as calculated under the term loan agreement, was approximately $72.7 million. Several lenders elected to waive their repayment. Accordingly, on April 30, 2014, we paid approximately $60.8 million of this amount. Pro forma for the excess cash flow recapture payment, our senior secured term loan balance would have been $2.39 billion at March 31st, and our senior secured leverage would have been 2.67 times. Now for a few comments on our first quarter financial results, pro forma for the acquired Northland Cable Systems during the quarter. As mentioned, the first quarter 2014 revenue was $575 million, representing growth of 6% or approximately $33 million over the first quarter of 2013. ARPU was $161.93, an increase of 9% over the prior year quarter. Our increase in total revenue for the first quarter 2014 versus the first quarter 2013 was largely attributable to an increase in residential high-speed internet, telephone and advanced video, digital video revenues, as well as growth in revenue from our commercial business, including carrier services and growth in advertising revenue. Video service revenues increased 1.4% due primarily to video rate increases, higher broadcast retransmission charges, and customer growth in our digital and advanced video services, including converter rental revenue from high-definition and DVR-capable digital converters. Offsetting this growth in part was the impact of basic video customer losses in the trailing 12 months, digital customers purchasing fewer digital tiers of service on average, and decreased revenues from our premium channels. High-speed internet service revenues rose 15.5% due primarily to an increase in residential high-speed internet customers, growth in home networking revenues, the impact of residential rate increases, the shift of customers to higher-speed internet products, growth in our commercial high-speed data services to small and medium-sized businesses, and growth in our carrier services, including fiber to the tower, as well as optical internet and transport revenues. Total service revenues grew 2.3% due primarily to an increase in residential telephone customers and growth in our commercial telephone services to small and medium-sized businesses, offset in part by the impact of bundle discounts to residential customers. Advertising revenues increased 16.1% due primarily to higher national political advertising revenue. Excluding political, advertising revenues increased 0.6%. Other revenues increased 0.7% due primarily to increases in admin fees, wire maintenance, security service, and state recovery fee revenue, offset in part by decreases in installation revenue. Our commercial lines of business embedded in the video, high-speed internet, telephone service, and other revenues described earlier are comprised of commercial and bulk video, commercial high-speed data, commercial telephone, and on- and off-net carrier services. Representing approximately 14% of total company revenue in the first quarter of 2014, commercial revenue of $79.6 million grew 13.2% versus the first quarter of 2013. Commercial high-speed data, on-net carrier services, and telephone revenue grew 18.7% year-over-year on a combined basis. Operating costs and expenses increased 5.9% in the first quarter of 2014 versus the first quarter of 2013, primarily due to higher programming costs, increased broadcast retransmission consent expenses, and increased labor and employee-related costs. The first quarter of 2014 included nearly $1 million of non-recurring expenses, primarily related to our internal telephone platform migration project and acquisition due diligence costs. The first quarter of 2013 included $1.3 million of non-recurring expenses, primarily related to due diligence costs. Before the impact of non-recurring expenses, adjusted EBITDA for the first quarter 2014 was $222 million, an increase of 6% compared to the same quarter last year. This resulted in an adjusted EBITDA margin of 38.6%. After the impact of non-recurring expenses, adjusted EBITDA for the first quarter 2014 was $221.1 million, an increase of 6.2% compared to the same quarter last year. This resulted in an adjusted EBITDA margin of 38.4%. Income from operations for the first quarter 2014 was $68.8 million, an increase of 48.6% compared to the $46.3 million for the first quarter 2013. This is due primarily to an increase in adjusted EBITDA and a decrease in amortization expense, offset in part by an increase in depreciation expense resulting from the capital expenditures during the trailing 12 months. Net income for the first quarter 2014 was $4.7 million, compared to a net loss of $16.4 million for the first quarter of 2013. Capital expenditures for the 3 months ended March 31 were $95.4 million, compared to $98.2 million for the 3 months ended March 31, 2013. During 2014, we expect capital expenditures to be approximately $360 to $370 million, which includes capital expenditures for the recently acquired cable systems from Northland Communications. This estimate could increase due to success-based opportunities in our commercial and carrier businesses, or should we decide to significantly increase internet speeds company-wide. On March 2013, we began Operation Reliant, an initiative to replace our use of third-party telephone service provider with our own internal platform and resources. The majority of the migration activity related to this initiative will take place in 2014. And we expect to complete this process early in 2015. We expect this project will significantly reduce telephone operating expenses when completed. Since the project's inception, we have spent $2.7 million of the total expected $30 million of non-recurring operating expenses, including $700,000 in the first quarter of this year. To date, we've spent $8 million of the total expected $20 million of capital expenditures, including $1.7 million in the first quarter of 2014. Free cash flow for the first quarter 2014 was $68.7 million compared to $38.1 million for the same period in 2013, an increase of 80%. The increase in free cash flow is due to improved operating results and decreases in both cash interest expense and capital expenditures. I'll now conclude my remarks and turn the call back over to the operator to facilitate questions. I would like to remind everyone that this is a public call and we will generally refrain from discussing information other than what is disclosed in our earnings release and quarterly report. Operator?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the star, then the zero key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, if you have a question, please press the star, then the one key on your touchtone telephone. Our first question comes from Jason Kim from Goldman Sachs. Your line is open.
Great. Thank you. A question for Jerry to start. There's been a lot of news flow involving some larger M&A transactions in the space as of late, but where do you see the potential for M&A pipeline from Sequel's perspective? And you know, when we look at your balance sheet at the end of the quarter, your leverage is towards the end, towards the lower end of the range the company has typically operated with in the past. So now, how do you look at your balance sheet capacity in this context, whether it's for M&A or potentially looking to start returning capital to shareholders, and do you have a preference between those two options?
Well, we continue to look at acquisition opportunities. Where it makes strategic sense, we're very interested in continuing to expand our holdings. We think that there are important benefits to scale. Historically, those scale benefits included mostly programming. But in addition to that, recently, with the geometric change in technology that the industry is experiencing, there's also significant scale benefits as we make investments in new technology. And so we continue to look at those acquisitions. We're opportunistic. We kiss a lot of frogs before, you know, we find the right ones. It has to make a lot of strategic sense. And but we'll continue to look at those opportunities. In terms of our balance sheet, absent an acquisition or some other major capital event, we'll continue to have our excess cash flow recapture test that will, as we pay down debt, absent an acquisition or some other event, the same would occur at the end of the year. We're very comfortable with our leverage level. Right now, I'm not planning on going out and significantly leveraging up unless there's an acquisition opportunity. So I'll leave it at that.
Great, thank you. And then just a couple of questions about your phone migration project. So it looks like you have about $27 million or so of OPEX left to be spent for the project until early 2015. But you know, just for modeling purposes, is there a ballpark figure you can share with us in terms of how those dollars should be spent in the balance of 2014? And should it be split pretty evenly throughout the last three quarters, or will there be any lumpiness in terms of when you spend that money?
Right. So we haven't, other than to say that the bulk or substantially all of the migration will happen in 2014, we haven't given further specifics about how it lays out over the next three quarters.
Okay, fair enough. And then in terms of the margin benefit from the project, when do you start seeing the impact on your financials? I mean, does that happen when you start migrating subscribers in the third quarter, or is it more of a 2015 event after you've completed your project?
It's more of a 2015 event when we enjoy the benefit of those subscribers in our new cost structure.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
thank
David.
You. Our next question comes from David Phillips from Citi. Your line is open.
Hi, it's David Phillips from Citi. Thanks for taking my questions. Can you talk about some of the differences in gross margin from the fourth quarter to the first quarter? It looks like it's up about 300 basis points. It kind of changed trends. So for my modeling, can you help me understand that?
Fourth quarter to the first quarter.
You're saying gross margin is?
Gross margin is higher, so gross margin is higher.
Hang on.
Okay, no worries. And maybe while you're thinking about that, maybe we could talk about some of the political ad opportunities that you might have as we go through the year, and then just remind me of the timing of the excess cash flow payment.
Yeah, so from a political standpoint, obviously we've enjoyed some primaries and actually an additional runoff race in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been beneficial to us. We have some races in Louisiana and Arkansas as well. Typically we get a little bit heavier spending at times in the primaries than we do in the general election later in the year. But at this point, we're optimistic that we'll continue to enjoy participation in those activities, given the activity we see in the states in which we operate.
Fair enough.
And then you had a
on the margin question. We don't show a 300 point increase in margin. We actually have a slight decline in the margin, which is typical in the first quarter, because that's when a lot of our programming cost increases kick in.
I'm looking at the gross margin line. The EBITDA margin is down sequentially, but the mix has changed about what the margin was. So maybe it's just, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we have disclosed gross margin details, so I would have to have a further conversation with you about where that number is coming from. That's not consistent with our data.
Okay, and I'll follow up with you after that.
Yeah.
So
okay.
when you look out at your growth opportunities, you certainly had a nice acceleration on the high-speed internet. And was there anything that in particular promotional or drives or seasonality that you can think about that was really a factor in that, or was it just a need for bandwidth?
Yeah, I would say a couple things helped us. One, traditionally February is a big month for us, and we enjoyed another robust February. Second, our e-commerce channel, as we mentioned, has really picked up its game for us. And in addition to that, there's no particular discounts or deals that we were running in the first quarter any different than the offers that we've made in previous quarters. And I would hope that it's a sign of our messaging to customers and our ability to execute on the inbound demand that we get and on the door-to-door channels that we're executing on. So obviously there's over the last several quarters there's been momentum, particularly as you said, both on the internet side as well as on the phone side. As Jerry mentioned in his comments, and I believe I did in mine as well, we've also seen an uptick in our triple play sell-in rates are now at 20% plus. And so people are obviously attracted to the products and services and see good value in for what we're offering.
Hopefully it's a sign that our investments in our infrastructure, our speed increases, and our really big efforts at customer satisfaction, that they're all paying off. You know, there was a special shout out in PC Magazine and Consumer Reports, specifically noting the favorable response that they received about Suddenlink service. We continue to be the most improved operator in JD Power, Consumer Reports, and customer satisfaction. So hopefully, it's a sign that our investments are paying off.
All right, and then finally, when you said you on the M&A questions, so you said you've looked at a number of things. Do you continue to see a lot of opportunities for investment that are non-organic?
I would say that we don't see there's just not a huge amount of activity out there that we see other than the major ones that have been reported.
Fair enough. All right. Well, congratulations. Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mike Pace with J.P. Morgan. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning, and thank you. I had a couple of big picture questions for Jerry, and I guess just in light of what's going on with industry consolidation, and if now what I'd call a larger peer, may have to likely play a little nicer in the sandbox, I guess, if that deal closes to with certain folks. You may lose a big advocate in the retrans fight. How may that impact the net neutrality or the preferred traffic debate going on? And maybe offsetting that, is there the ability for, shared technology opportunities with a new larger company there? And just how do you think about those things as a small to mid-sized MSO that you run now?
Yeah, it's a really good question. There's a lot of uncertainty going on in the industry about what the impact of the potential transactions could have. I think it is. I think it's fair to say, as you suggest, that losing, if the deals all happen as advertised, let me preface it by saying that, then I think it's safe to say that we have lost one of our advocates for changing some antiquated laws with respect to retransmission consent and with respect to certain programming arrangements. They were a big force in the American TV Alliance, and clearly I wouldn't expect Comcast to continue that given their asset makeup. And so I think it's fair to say that we may have lost a good advocate. I will say, however, on the other side of that, is the fact that a number of legislators are recognizing that programming and retransmission consent in particular are running rampant in terms of significant continuing increases in the cost structure and what we have to pass along to our customers and the consumer. And there is talk of a telecom rewrite. And we would hope that as that would progress, that we'd have a voice in how we would redo some laws that came back decades ago that really are completely antiquated given the changes in the marketplace. And, I don't know what's going to happen. We have questions about what happens to some of the industry associations, cable labs, an NCTA under a different landscape, assuming all these deals occur. There are questions that's going to take time to evolve. But frankly, I know some people are extremely nervous about the revised environment. But frankly, from my perspective, the way I look at it, Comcast is a 22-million-pound gorilla going to 29-million-pound gorilla. I'm not really sure a lot changes. Charter gets bigger. I would hope that Tom and his management team, I have great respect for. I think they're terrific. I hope that they'll help fill the void for voices of change in programming and retransmission consent. And but frankly, while there's some uncertainty, I'm not sure a lot has changed from how it affects us. Is we're still focused on organic growth and serving our customers. We've seen great benefit from our investments and customer satisfaction. The unique aspect about our business is a lot of it's local. We don't compete with Comcast in virtually all of our markets. We don't compete with Time Warner or Charter in virtually all of our markets. And we're focused on taking care of our customers, making the smart investments,
reaping the benefits of Project Imagine. If you recall, it was completed, and we have significant free cash flow generation. And we like our business. We're happy with the results. We think there's still a long runway for growth in residential and commercial side of the business. And while all these changes are occurring around us, we're still focused on serving our customers and generating organic growth, and think we can do that for foreseeable future. You know, we're entrepreneurial. While we don't have the scale benefits, we like to think we can move as fast as anyone. We're nimble, and that you know, it's a complicated business, but it still comes down, if you take better care of the customer than your competitor, you win, and that's what we're focused on.
Great. Thanks for the retrans and programming comments, and but also, I guess, on net neutrality, or I guess what they're calling preferred traffic right now, you know, do you think that deal changes the industry argument, or is that just going to take place as the regulators see fit?
I guess I don't – can you ask the question in a different way? I'm not sure exactly what you're getting at.
Yeah, I guess there's just a big debate on net neutrality and the thought of opening up, I guess, preferred traffic lanes. The FCC is looking for comments on that and will likely come out with different net neutrality rules. I'm just curious, I guess, your thoughts in general on those and how that could be an opportunity or a risk for the cable business, and whether or not, I guess, that the pending deal between the larger operators might change that, I guess, if it would.
Well, it's a good question, but I think, you know, today's announcement about making it easier for our customers to access Netflix is just an example of, you know, these internet video content companies. They're friend and foe. They are competition, but frankly, we're more focused on making it easier for our customers to access the content that they want. I personally think that a lot of the rhetoric and concerns that have been recently voiced by some consumer organizations are overblown. We're certainly not planning on having a lot of different lanes and discriminating traffic. I mean, we're not going to block access to content. We're going to make it easy for our customers to access the content that they want in the best manner we can. And we believe in the long run, that's what's going to make us continue to be successful.
And then I guess big picture question number two, in less parts, I promise. If we think about internet video service offerings that may come around soon, a couple years, not really sure, but, you know, Dish sounds like they're heading there, maybe DirecTV, of Verizon and AT&T investing in this. I personally don't see this as a threat to your high-end video base, but, you know, maybe your lower, maybe mid-tier video customers. You know, do you see that as a threat? Do you see the potential positive that you own the broadband pipe? You know, how do you see the net positive negative for that?
I mean, we certainly believe there'll be continued internet video competition. I think it's around the corner. It's not years. And we're preparing ourselves to make sure that we're good to go in that more intensely competitive environment. It could have some impact on our video business, but frankly, you know, video is a mature business. There's not a lot of growth left in terms of, you know, expanding the marketplace. It's all about competing on share versus our competitors. And our margins are not really improving in the video space. If customers want to go to if they want to cut the cord and go to internet video, you have to recall that in over 90% of the homes that we can potentially serve, our competitor is DSL. And if you're going to watch HD or 4K internet video in our marketplace, we are the best broadband pipe in the marketplace. We are committed to making investments that no matter what happens, we will continue to be the preeminent broadband provider in the markets that we serve. And so if internet video starts coming out, I think it plays to our strength because people in the marketplaces we serve are going to want Suddenlink's internet service. So while there's some risk on the video side, I think it solidifies our positioning and really the investments that we've made through Project Imagine to make sure that we continue to have the preeminent broadband service is kind of a hedge against internet video. And we're certainly arming ourselves, so if World War III breaks out, we're not left unarmed in this race.
Great. Appreciate the thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Davis Herbert from Wells Fargo Security. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking the questions. I wanted to ask a question that I thought was an interesting theme out of the cable show, certainly a bigger theme than we've heard in the past, which is Wi-Fi. And I know Comcast has talked about 8 million Wi-Fi hotspots. Where does Sequel stand on the Wi-Fi front? Do you feel like it's complementary, or can it be a competitive product to the wireless broadband side or LTE at some point?
I think I would say first, from a technology standpoint, as innovative as we are through partnering, we are also a fast follower. And so we're naturally paying attention to what they're doing. We are deploying several hundred access points ourselves in one of our service areas. And so we'll get some learnings from that. We absolutely think it's for sure complementary to the services that we already provide. It's an excellent way for people to offload their data traffic, right, from expensive cellular networks onto more affordable broadband networks. And I think it still remains to be seen whether it's a viable competitor to an LTE cellular service. Certainly as from a data standpoint.
And we are starting we are deploying Wi-Fi hotspots in addition, of course, to the Wi-Fi that we provide to our residential and business customers.
Got it. Okay. Thanks for that. And on the broadband speeds, you know, customers continue to take higher speeds. My question is that more reverse from the customer asking for more speed, or is there some sort of customer touch point where you're the driver of that, whether it's pushing promotion or something of that nature?
I think we're presenting new customers options when they call in or we come in contact with them. We're presenting them options from 15 meg to 100 plus meg, and they're electing based on those options to, you know, in more and more cases, to take 30 meg speeds or greater.
And then others of our customers are upgrading. Right. Our existing HSI customers are routinely upgrading to higher speeds to, you know, enjoy a more robust service, or because they are using TiVo, which requires, you know, a minimum speed, for example.
So to answer your question specifically, I would say both. It's both customers, as they get more educated, wanting the faster speeds, and we're certainly promoting it because it's to our strength and advantage since we have the fastest speeds in the markets that we serve. And I think it's an education process. I think if you educate the consumer and they realize what speed brings you, then I think there'll be more demand for faster speeds. And things like Google Fiber and Gigabit AT&T just brings more attention to this fact and helps educate the consumer.
Right. And so a follow-up to that, if a customer moves from 15 meg, let's say, to 50 meg, what does the incremental margin impact look like to Suddenlink?
From a pricing standpoint, you're talking about $20 more.
And most of it
just depends on what their consumption levels are at peak.
Right, and we have said that our high-speed margins among our product categories are the highest.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Okay. And then looking at your commercial revenue, another nice quarter, up 13%. Can you detail how much is that from cell backhaul? How much of the growth?
Yeah, I want to point out, first of all, that our increase of 13% includes the video business. I think if you are comparing our results to our MSO peers, you might want to look at high-speed internet, phone, and on-net, whose growth was in the high teens in aggregate. And we don't generally break out what part of that was carrier. Carrier is still the smaller component of our business, but the fastest growing one. The carrier business over indexes that 19% growth significantly.
Okay, that's helpful. And then another way, just another question on the M&A front. A couple of your peers have acquired cloud or managed services companies in the past few years. Do you feel like that's an offering that's you know, a hole in your product suite?
So particularly from a commercial standpoint, we will partner with companies that provide those services if over time we build a customer base large enough and it makes sense to bring that business, you know, internal, we would look to do that.
Okay. Thank you. And last question for me. The FCC has clamped down on joint retrans negotiations of two of the top four stations in a market. Do you feel like this could slow the pace of retrans growth? I mean, the broadcasters seemingly think it will not, but just curious to know your thoughts on that.
I think at most it would be a marginal benefit. I still think that the way the rules are set up, that it favors the broadcaster significantly, and they still have market power. And frankly, there's been so much consolidation ongoing within the broadcasting groups with the affiliates that I think it still enhances their bargaining position. So a marginal benefit.
Got it. Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Adam Spielman from PPM America. Your line is open.
Thank you, Trimica. Just one brief question. When we look at your non-video subs, can you give us a rough breakout? How many of those are just single-play data subs versus a bundle with phone?
Yeah, that level of detail we generally don't release.
Okay, and is there any?
Right, just you know, we do not add phone-only subs. That's not our business plan. And the number of subscribers that are data versus data phone bundles, we don't generally release that.
Sure. And do you have any sense of who these customers are? I mean, are they satellite TV customers? Are they outright just new customers that you're adding that maybe don't have video? And do you care whether they're churning down from your, you know, video package onto something else and keeping the data?
Well, yeah, we certainly care. But as we market, if someone is in a satellite contract but really wants our broadband speeds, which our competitors can't provide, and bundled in with a phone package that provides significant value, then we're happy to sell those services into the home and wait for the satellite contract to expire. But we certainly care about whether people are downgrading or changing their service with us. But I think it's more of customers realizing that we have a far superior internet service and they're migrating from DSL over to us.
And given, you know, we are not out in the marketplace with $9.95 internet or anything like that. So given that, it's probably share shift to us versus, you know, God knows if there's somebody still on dial-up or not on internet. It's not likely those are the kinds of customers that we're getting in our internet service.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, if you have a question at this time, please press the star then the one key on your touch-tone telephone. Our next question comes from Mike Curran from SunTrust. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask, just kind of go back to the Netflix deal that you announced today and see if I could get just a little more detail on that. It seems like, you know, there's a possibility that putting Netflix on TiVo and your decision to allow that could cannibalize some revenue from some of the movie channels like Stars, that maybe you have revenue sharing agreements with them. Is there any kind of impact you expect on video margins from putting Netflix on TiVo? And is there any kind of payment that Netflix is making for its placement on the TiVo box?
Let me address a few of those, or all of them. And one is that from the beginning, we have been open to enabling experiences for our customers that make it easy on them, as Jerry said. So we have been open to these kinds of arrangements. As you know, Netflix was actually prohibited up until the end of last year from even having these kinds of conversations with us. So whether it's Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or any of these folks, we are open to those conversations if they are able to have them with us, because we know today that many of our customers already use Netflix. We index or over-index our customer base does as Netflix users. So with 33 million or however many million customers Netflix has today in our footprint, many of our customers are Netflix customers. So they're accessing Netflix either on a computer or if on a TV screen they're doing it through other types of devices, it's inconvenient. So now it will be much more convenient for them. So I think it will be a better experience for them. You know, maybe it will help our churn. Hopefully it will help how people, our customers, think about us in terms of our value proposition of being easy to do business with. We think it certainly supports that. With respect to specifics of the deal, as I said, as Jerry said, we'll be putting out a press release later today, and we, as we do with all deals, don't give into the specifics nor the economics of those relationships.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Yep.
Thank you. I'm showing no further questions at this time.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for your continued interest in our company. We appreciate it, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This does conclude today's program. You may all disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.